You're listening to The People's Show with Sat, Dan, and Randeep on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Trade is now official between the Vancouver Canucks and Winnipeg Jets. Nate Schmidt is headed to Winnipeg in exchange for a third-round pick, the Canucks recouping the third-round pick that they traded to Vegas in exchange for Nate Schmidt just last offseason. Jim Benning quoted in the press release to say, "We are pleased to regain a third-round pick in next year's draft as we look to continue strengthening our prospect pool. We'd like to thank Nate for his contributions to our club, and we wish him and his family well." So there is the quote from Jim Benning, who, depending on who you ask, is having one hell of an offseason.
It is. I mean, it's an off season and a half right now, and it's still incomplete, right? And you know, we can sit here and have fun with it, and to really evaluate what this Canucks team is like, we're going to find out with the deals they signed. Pedersen, Hughes, those are massive contracts. And it's the Jason Dickinson one too, which is looming large as a third line center or fourth line center if you can find another guy that maybe competes with him for that role. So it's still an incomplete picture, but what the Canucks have done is they turned, giving up assets for it and a lot of risk with Oliver Ekman-Larsson, but they turned three contracts that were dead weight into two players that would help them now. They cleared a bunch of cap space. They got a third-round pick back, and now it's essentially what you do with it. You have a lot of possibilities in front of you, and if you play your cards right, you might be able to improve this team significantly for next season.
We were talking about, you know, what do you do with the cap space you have? And there's a lot of talk about bargain bin shopping. To the most extent, you know, you're still going to see the majority of the players are going to be value plays, right? Whether players that weren't qualified or if you're looking for a backup goalie. But you do have a little bit of money to spend now on that right shot defenseman. How far up the food chain does Jim Benning go for that move? That's what we got to watch for tomorrow, because you do have some money to spend now.
Let's bring in our next guest, Kevin Woodley, In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. What's going on, Kevin?
I mean, just a little bit. Like, is there anything that's not going on at this point? The reigning Vezina Trophy winner is a member of the Chicago Blackhawks, but might not report. The Canucks bought out the goaltender they signed last year and now dealt the defense. Like, is there much going on? Just a little bit.
Yeah, the Canucks are certainly, they've been busy. They just traded Nate Schmidt as well, but you know, the whole Holtby situation, like, how do you view it and how it's all played out here since last offseason?
Well, I mean, I was optimistic that he'd be able to transition here faster than he did and make some of the changes in his game that I knew they had identified as needing to be made. And I think he bought in. And I think what a lot of us underestimated, including teams, was just the unique nature of this season, no preseason, including Holtby himself. And he talked about this late in the year, just how hard it was to sort of get comfortable with different elements, excuse me, guys, that he was changing in his game without sort of playing, without a preseason, without a chance to get comfortable in that environment. There was just no margin for error. As soon as the season started, like, you just had to be on, especially when things started poorly for the Canucks. And so there wasn't a real, you know, opportunity. And I thought by the end of the season, some of those elements that he was trying to change looked better to me, a lot better. And I thought I saw positive signs. But at the end of the day, with the changes they've made around him, they couldn't afford the cap hit. That's what it comes down to. Like, this isn't, I don't even know that you're going to get an upgrade for what you're looking to spend on what Braden Holtby could still give you next season. I think they were confident that the changes he had made were starting to pay off and would pay off this year. This is purely about not being able to afford the cap hit, and, you know, not even to being able to afford a portion of the cap hit or half of the cap hit. Otherwise, they could have easily moved him. There were teams interested as long as retention was on the table. And in at least one case, a player could have come back the other way. So this is, you know, unfortunately just a matter of them not being able to afford him anymore at the deal they signed him for. So at least they did it now. So he has an opportunity to explore the market rather than play chicken with the teams that were interested, see if they could get them to eat the whole contract, maybe if they didn't land on their first or second choice in free agency, and then use that second buyout window, which, you know, kind of would have been like a game of chicken, But the one that loses ultimately at the end of it, if it doesn't work out, is Braden Holt, because he then gets bought out with no teams looking for goaltenders. And this is very much going to be, it already has been, a game of musical chairs in which if you are too patient or wait too long as a goaltender, you could very well end up without a seat.
Well, that's the big thing, too. And I think for the Canucks, now that they have all the cap space, the threat of an offer sheet, if there even exists the one for Pettersson, that becomes hollow really, really quickly, because you have all the room to match and fill out the rest of your roster if that happens. But as far as replacing Braden Holtby, you mentioned it's going to be hard to find a guy maybe as good as him, especially when you don't want to spend a lot of money. I mean, you don't buy out Holtby to go and spend $3 million on a backup. You're looking at that $1.5 million range or so, maybe a bit more. And we heard Arthur Staple link number of insiders have linked Jaromír Halák to the Vancouver Canucks. Do you see him being a fit, and does it make sense price range-wise for him to be the backup to Demko?
Well, I mean, the price range is going to depend on what, like, I mean, this is, you know, this is a market where I've had agents that specialize in goaltenders telling me to expect guys who are traditionally $3.5 million guys going for the $2 to $2.5 million range. So what that means for Jaromír Halák, who I think he was on a $2.5 million ticket last year, I'm expecting that to be pushed down even further. And, you know, I know Thomas Drantz has done a great job of already underlining, because he's over 35, the way you can structure those contracts in terms of bonuses to, you know, again, sort of potentially, if he hits the bonuses, kick the can down the road on the cost. So in terms of price, you know, I'm not sure what that is, but I don't think it's going to be expensive. In terms of fit, he checks the box in terms of experience. I know the training staff's going to love him, because he might be the only goalie in the NHL that actually buys his own pads and gloves from his equipment manufacturer. So that'll save him some bucks. But when I look at the environment here, there's a risk here. Jaro has been very good for the past number of seasons, especially in good defensive environments. Last year, those numbers cratered, and to the point where he lost his job to a guy with less professional experience than Michael DiPietro has in Jeremy Swayman. So, you know, there is some risk here. You have to sort of figure out what happened last year, what changed last year for Jaroslav Halák. Because up to that point, he was cruising along as a, you know, really nicely above expected goaltender, had a couple of years alongside Tuukka Rask, where his adjusted save percentage was not far behind Rask, in years where Rask, you know, should have been and was talked about as, you know, a Vezina candidate. So, like, that's how good he's been. And yet last year, out of 68 goalies, 200-plus shots on the ClearSight analytics chart, he's 58th in his save percentage. So, you know, there is that risk for an aging goaltender that was the start. But I'm sure I can get a handle with him on what happened and, you know, whether it's a fit there. In terms of style and the chances they give up, a couple of the risks are this. The Canucks give up more breakaways than any team in the NHL. That's an area where Jaroslav Halák has struggled statistically. They gave up a lot of broken plays. Thatcher Demko, despite limited workload, like, he wasn't, you know, the busiest. Like, he didn't get the most starts, but he saw the most broken play chances in the National Hockey League last year. Another area where Jaroslav Halák is well under expected. Now, the one positive is on slot line plays, lateral plays, east-west plays, again, a dangerous play for goaltenders, and again, one that the Canucks gave up more than any other team in the National Hockey League. Jaroslav Halák has been excellent. Even last year in a really down season, he was well above expected in that type of chance. So there are some elements that fit here. I've always viewed Jaro, I mean, he's undersized at 5'10". He is a goaltender who rarely beats himself. He plays, you know, he's from the Roley Melanson school. That's sort of who discovered him in Montreal and brought him along. Three quarters depth in the crease, despite being a smaller goaltender, isn't going to be aggressive, isn't going to chase plays, isn't super athletic, a spectacular save guy. But he's going to be in position, he's going to be there early, he's going to be set, and he's going to make you beat him with great shots. Like, he's kind of a take away the middle guy and tip the hat if you pick a corner, but that's what it's going to take to beat him. And he's had a lot of success in his career doing that. And so, you know, maybe that's enough if they can tighten up defensively. Maybe that's a great fit. But there are signs, at least in terms of how this team has defended in the recent past and his performance even before last year, that make you at least wonder a little bit about the fit.
Love it. The full scouting report from Kevin Woodley here on The People Show on Sportsnet 650. Another name that's been linked to the Canucks. Great, you know, 2015 to 2018 for Antti Raanta, but the last couple of years, Kevin, he hasn't been healthy. What do you think about him? Did I hear a no there? Stay away?
Yeah, I know you heard a no, and it's possible that he's been linked, but I honestly really don't.
We're going to try and reconnect with you, Kevin. Your phone just cutting out there as you were answering about Antti Raanta.
A flat out no from Kevin, though. I'm looking forward to hearing that response, because that was an immediate
no. Very decisive.
He was very decisive on that, yes. Antti Raanta, it's a big no from you, Kevin.
Yeah, sorry, guys. All those metal plates in my head. Every once in a while, I turn to the left and the cell reception just goes for crap. Listen, it is a no for me, and you're talking to a guy who was a big Antti Raanta guy for a lot of years. He was a guy I would have targeted in the past for sure, but I'm looking for here. Like, understand, like, remember, I think we talked last week about the possibility of a shuttle for Michael DiPietro and you know, sort of going cheap on the backup role and using him as part of that rotation. I think because they're so all in on next year, they can't afford to take that risk. They do need a guy with experience to be here in case, say, Thatcher Demko has a 4-week injury. You can't afford not to have, you know, yet you need to know what you've got behind him. And so I think that sort of prevents that sort of shuttle plan. Although I still think Mikey DiPietro, just because of who he is, ends up putting himself in this mix based on the likely quality of what you're going to get as a backup by the end. That's a long-winded way of saying, if you're looking for a guy as an insurance policy, you really shouldn't invest in a guy who probably needs to take out an insurance policy, because Antti Raanta just cannot stay healthy. It's almost beyond physical at this point. It's gotten to the point where some of the stories out of Arizona in terms of, you know, taking himself out of action because he's not feeling it or not feeling well, and them having a tough time even identifying what was wrong a long time later. It's just, at the end of the day, to me, all the talent in the world would love to say go get him, but, and I believe they've done their due diligence. They're probably aware of this. The big part of the job is being available to do the job. And that is an area where he has fallen short. To me, he is right there with Michael Neuwirth, and he'll probably get one more shot here. But when Michael Neuwirth got his one last shot, it lasted weeks, and then it was another injury. So I love Antti Raanta's game, but something's happened down there. And this is the one question mark, I would say, is because we see this. And I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Like, the injuries that pile up there down in Arizona, like, you start to scratch your head a little bit. And I know the Canucks added a new name to their training staff last year. I'm hoping they bring him back. I know a lot of goalies who have worked with him. He's a local guy, and they swear he's a miracle worker. And if there's one guy that could fix Antti Raanta, it would be this guy. And like I said, hoping the Canucks bring him back after he was there last season. But even at that, even with that in your back pocket, I'm not sure I'd take that risk now.
Kevin Woodley in Goal Magazine and NHL.com, our guests. So, Kevin Woodley's out there shopping for a backup goalie. Who are you looking at amongst this free agent crop?
Well, I mean, honestly, all the reporting indicates it's going to be Jaroslav Halak, so I don't know how deep we need to go down this. You know, James Reimer might be a fit, but too expensive. Laurent Brossoit might be a fit. Obviously, we saw how well he's played. Every time he plays Vancouver, he did a really good job in Winnipeg in terms of his adjusted numbers last season especially were actually right there just below Connor Hellebuck in terms of his performance. And he did it despite not playing a lot. Like, it's not easy, as we know, to go a couple weeks between starts. And that's something that Laurent Brossoit has gotten really good at. Unfortunately, I think there's going to be a fair bit of interest in him. And it's not something he's looking to, like, if he wanted to keep doing that, he would just stay in Winnipeg, right? And so I don't know. Like, I think they're probably going to look for more experience. And I think in Brossoit's case, as a younger guy that, you know, might have more upside than some of the older names you look at, I think he's going to look for opportunity. And the reality of how good Thatcher Demko has become in short order here is other young goalies aren't going to look at this as a place where, hey, there's an opportunity for me to become the number one. And when you look around the league with a lot of the movement we've seen, I mean, there's a couple teams right now that don't have any NHL goaltenders on their roster. I think guys like that will seek out the opportunity in places like that before they look at this as an option. So you're probably looking a little older. One name that, you know, I kind of doubt it, but I wouldn't rule it out if it gets thin in a hurry. And this is one, this is another guy whose numbers have really cratered the last 2 years, and that's Curtis McIlhenny. There's even some thought he may retire around the league, coming off back-to-back Stanley Cup wins where he didn't get to play in the playoffs. The only reason I mention it at all is because Curtis is a guy who was almost out of the league a while back, and then he went to Columbus, and then he worked with Ian Clark, and he's had a pretty good career since. And despite those numbers cratering in the past 2 years, I know COVID and a positive test was a part of this past year, so you got to sort of get a handle on how he was affected by that. He's only 2 years removed from showing that he could be a guy in Carolina that when you needed someone to step up and play a lot, he had that in him. So he has the experience factor. But to me, that's if option A, B, and C don't pan out. And like I said, a guy who could quite easily hang them up at the end of the day tomorrow. But you know, if you're looking for cheap, veteran, experienced options and you get that far down the list, there is a history there at least.
We got this question. Kevin Woodley is our guest in Goal Magazine, NHL.com, here on the People Show on Sportsnet 650. This question from Gordy Locke on Twitter. Is Martin Jones fixable?
Ooh. Yeah, he is. Interestingly enough, Martin Jones worked with Ian Clark as a young junior in Rogers Arena. I'll never forget showing up and late after a practice or being late leaving the rink and hearing pucks banging off the glass and poking my head out and seeing like a 15 or 16-year-old Martin Jones out there with Mark Crawford, Ian Clark, Dylan Crawford, his son who now works for the Blackhawks, and Ian Clark's son, and thinking like, who's the man among boys? And it was Martin Jones. His technical game, like that's what he was when he first came out, when he first went to Los Angeles. He was considered a very strong technical goaltender, and he almost seemed to push back against that. And so he sort of stopped going to goalie school, for lack of a better term. And, you know, now he just pretty much plays shinny in the offseason. His technical game kind of eroded on him, the foundation of movement. There was no rotation in his movement. And a lot of people sort of from afar saw this happening. And so you can look at it now and say, is it fixable? Yes, I can fix that. But I think they started the process in San Jose last year with some of the changes they made of Jenny Nabokov coming in, Adam Prencilia being hired as a trainer. I know Martin Jones went up to Kelowna and worked with him off ice and on ice, trying to build some of those new foundations of movement and getting rotation and movement into his game. And actually, there was some interest around the league and some guys that reached out looking for intel on him, you know, expecting this buyout, because early in the season, it was all there. Like it looked like he was integrating it into his game and having some success. The question is why it disappeared by late in the season. And so there are some question marks about, you know, why it didn't get retained, why he slipped back to some old habits and the numbers quickly followed. Tough defensive environment in San Jose. They give up a ton off the rush. His expected save percentage has been really low for the last number of years behind that team, especially, you know, it's sort of Burns and Carlson at all times, and that means they give up a ton the other way, odd man, because those guys are so active up in the rush. So it has been a hard environment. But I don't know that the Canucks are looking for a project, right? And there are some question marks, at least out there, fair or not, about how eager Martin is to be a project or to make significant changes to his game. And like I said, this past year, I think people saw signs, positive signs that things were taking hold, and yet the fact he wasn't able to hold on to them or they didn't last throughout the season led to just as many questions. So I'm fascinated to see where he goes and what opportunity he gets and what he does with it, because his ability to play at a high level, despite a lot of those elements in his game being, you know, slipping and being outdated and the technique sort of eroding a little bit on him, eroding is maybe not a fair word, falling behind some of the changes that were going on around him. And this is why you like the no stone unturned guys, right? Like if you're not getting better every year, you're falling behind because every other goalie is finding new ways to improve. And so he just kind of fell behind that curve. And the fact he was able to sort of stay, keep his head above water as long as he did that way, tells you there's a lot of really positive elements there, whether it's his ability to read the game or react or just on instinct. But until you sort of really dial down on that technical foundation, I don't know that you can what you can count on from Martin Jones, and I'm just not sure they're interested in a project here, given their need for a security blanket behind Thatcher Demko.
You're listening to The People Show. We're joined by Kevin Woodley talking NHL goalies and a big move today. We talked about the Braden Holtby element here in Vancouver, but across the league, not every day a Vezina winner ends up getting traded following winning the award. Your thoughts on that deal and, you know, what potentially is next for Marc-Andre Fleury? Do you think he reports to Chicago?
I honestly don't know on that one. A little bit sad to see him. It just seemed like such a good fit there, but not surprised. Had mentioned this possibility on a radio show in Edmonton yesterday. Not that I knew it was going to be Chicago or had any details, but there was enough chatter sort of in the goal among the goalie free agency and among some of the goalies and goalie coaches that it was going to happen before UFA. And when you think of, I mean, it's much like Holtby, right? Like, they didn't want necessarily to lose him. In fact, they weren't, because they were in a cap bind, limited the number of teams they could deal with. There are other teams interested in Marc-Andre Fleury, and it should be noted they shopped Robin Lehner first. But they're amongst the teams that, you know, had a chance to win right now, none of them could afford the cap hit. And if they were going to move him, it'd be moving the entire cap hit. Just like the Canucks couldn't afford to retain on Holtby, the buyout was a better option. And so I'm not surprised by it. Just a little saddened by how it all went down, not just for a Vezina Trophy winner, but for a guy who was the face of that franchise in Vegas. And to me, the interesting thing now is, does he report? I know how happy he was in Vegas and wanted to stay there. I think the number of options that would make him similarly happy are pretty much one other city, and that's Pittsburgh. I think Marc-Andre Fleury loves the game too much to walk away from it, but he's also got a family to think of, and they're a high priority for him. So I wouldn't totally discount it, especially after the way things went down today.
Woodley, we appreciate the time as always. Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys.
There is Kevin Woodley, In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. Marc-Andre Fleury did just release a statement essentially thanking the Vegas Golden Knights and the fans for his time in Vegas, but does not give much clarity on his future. So you heard what Kevin had to say there. We'll dissect that a little bit. But in our continued discussions of where the Canucks may go in their search for right-shot defensemen, Shane O'Brien joins us every Thursday on The People's Show. He actually broke the Brandon Montour trade from Buffalo to Florida. Mm-hmm. They played together in Anaheim. Shane O'Brien tweeting in the last half hour that Brandon Montour is going to stay in South Florida. So you could take another right shot defenseman off the free agent board, it looks like. And that takes what's already a very small market for the Vancouver Canucks to play in even smaller.
Yeah, and I think he would have been a guy that the Canucks would have at least had some interest in had he made it to the market. But, you know, we were wondering, what does that cap space do when you cleared up the Anton Strahlman money for Florida? And the sense was, yeah, it's either a Sutter, maybe the Ryan Suter, maybe it's Suter, maybe it's bringing back Brandon Montour with a kicking tires on Nate Schmidt. And when you look at the price range of what Mike Riley got, which was $3 million over 3 years, I would say that Montour is probably in that similar range, anywhere from $3 to $3.5 million. That would be my guess. If he gets more than that, well, good on him.
Hey, good for him. Beyond that, though, guys, we've all talked about the, you know, the Hamilton kind of aspect of it. Yeah, he's going to get silly money from somebody, most likely New Jersey. The lower end of this, though, Travis Hamonic is still out there, right? Yeah. You got Yanni Hakanpää, mm-hmm. who is 29 years old, who played 18 minutes in Carolina. He's a guy that you'll probably see some interest around the $1 million. There's value potential out there, but that does nothing for me. I'll be honest with you. Like, you've got a David Savard there. Somebody's going to throw a lot of money at him. This is a player that has said, hey, he'd be open to playing in Canada.
You're not taking him away from Montreal.
Most people are saying that's going to be Montreal. But
outside
of that,
you paying David Savard $5 million a year?
If it means I'm getting the best out of my player on the left-hand side.
Then why didn't they just keep Chris Tanev around last year?
Yeah, but they didn't have money, Reach. How many times do we have to go over that? They didn't have money last year. The owner said nothing. He didn't want to spend. So what are you supposed to do? You got to go back in a time machine and sort that out? You can't do that.
And David Savard, I think, has been a bit more durable than Chris Tanev has been, right?
True.
I mean, you know, he's a guy that doesn't get injured as much. And, you know, he is, you know, size-wise, he's a sturdy player. I think he does fit a lot of what Vancouver's looking for. Will it be $5 million? I don't – maybe it's a shade less, right? I mean, look at the market for defensemen. If it's in that 4.5 to 4.7 range for 4 years, that's probably a fair number for David Savard. George LaRocque reported that he might end up with the Montreal Canadiens anyways, so he may not be in the Canucks price range there. But I think Hamonic coming back is a real possibility. The Canucks have more than enough cap space to do it. And if it's a two-year deal, say in that 2.5 million range or something along that, I think that would be a nice – deal. Can they get Hamonic signed for less than $3 million will be my question, because I'm curious to see how much Montour is getting. Again, if Riley's getting three, Montour gets three and a bit more, and these guys go off the market and there are less guys available. Schmidt just got traded. Teams are looking for defensemen. You know, you might have to pay Hamonic closer to $3 million for 2 years. Like, it all kind of depends on what these guys get on these contracts.
And we'll have to see the next 24 hours. NHL signing season is upon us. And, of course, we're here with a ton of coverage through the day tomorrow on Sportsnet 650 and, of course, on Sportsnet Television as well. It's the People's Show. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. More coming next on Sportsnet 650.
You're listening to The People's Show with Sat, Dan, and Randeep on Sportsnet 650.
NHL signing season on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Black & Lee's Summer Warehouse Sale. Buy one, get one, half off on all suits. Details at blackandlee.com. We've been talking a lot of hockey today. I mean, it is signing season. And I do want to get back in on Wrong Answers Only and even Alex Ovechkin's new deal. But, Randeep, your boy Xavien Howard is asking out of the Miami Dolphins. Some breaking news out of the NFL.
Yeah, I'm not happy about this. He's one of the best in the league. He's trending towards being the best in the league.
Yeah.
He's a young player. His statement was very reasonable. The Dolphins just don't want to talk.
Yeah.
I'm confused, but I'm still hopeful.
It's so NFL.
I'm hoping that he leveraged the Adam Schefter tweet clout, you know, the leverage there, and the Miami Dolphins wake up and say, all right, yeah, we'll sit down, we'll make some concessions. Because he's one of the best things, if not the best thing, going for that franchise right now. He is their best player.
How about come to Cleveland?
No,
come to an organization that knows how to win.
You guys just drafted.
Come to an organization that has won a playoff game.
No, don't do it, Sat. Don't do me dirty like that.
Yes.
I love me some Xavien Howard, so
Dragon.
I'm all for it.
You know, like, this is kind of the thing with rebuilds that are so tough. Like, the Dolphins have done so many things really, 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 really well. But, like, then making that next step, you know, from being a good team to being a great team, finding your quarterback, like, you really just have to have so many things fall into place. And you know, to now have your star or one of your stars on defense be like, I don't know if I want to stay here long term. That's not great.
Boys, I'm going to try to, and shouts to Silver and Black Canuck who texted in right before you brought that up. This is a wellness check on Randeep now that Howard has requested a trade out of Miami. I'm going to maybe during the break meditate a little bit, try to center myself, be a little bit more mindful. But yes, I'm kind of like Tua situation. I'm kind of nervous, guys. Kind of nervous. This team
nervous.
Is finally getting good, or should be good. And then this comes. This falls in your lap. A trade request. Great.
He wants to get paid. That's right. I mean, that's what it is, right?
Yep.
Like, he wants to get paid. And, you know, like, he's not old or anything, but, you know, he's 28, right? And, you know, Miami's a young team. They're probably looking at it and saying, do we want to give this guy, like, one of the richest contracts to a cornerback right now? You know what I mean? Like, I kind of get it from Miami's perspective, but it's Xavien Howard. Like, right now, is he the best corner? Probably not, but he's probably the best at taking the ball away from the opposition.
Yeah, he's one of the best. He's in the conversation, right?
Yeah.
He's in that top three, top five, whatever you want to say. But yeah, I'm not. Thanks for bringing that up, Reach. I saw that on Twitter. I was trying to just off the radar for me, trying to be in a happy place, and you had to take me to that dark, dark place because you can't appreciate Miami Dolphins fans having any fun because you left us. You abandoned us, like the fake fan that you are.
No, there's no such thing as fun as a Miami Dolphin fan. That's why I dumped them and I went to the Seahawks.
Just wait till they come
with finding out it's a similar story. You just get angry at everything.
Yeah, and just wait till the Seahawks rebuild.
As long as Russell Wilson's run, I don't have to worry about that. All right. It is the People Show. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randy Janda. Wrong answers only. Why did Nate Schmidt eventually waive his no trade to Winnipeg? Get some new texts in on that. We'll get to some of those coming up. Nate Schmidt officially traded from Vancouver to the Winnipeg Jets for a third round draft pick. They take all of the cap hit as well. And we did get a text. Do the Canucks now have more cap space than Seattle? It's actually close. Seattle has about $6 million more in cap space than the Vancouver Canucks, maybe a little bit less than that. But that's kind of the work that Jim's been putting in here, and he's created some flexibility for the Vancouver Canucks, and now it's about what do you do with it over the next couple of days.
Well, that's the big thing, right? And if you factor in LTIR from Michael Ferland, that $26 million is actually closer to $30 million, well, $29.5 million to be exact. So, you know, if the Canucks really want to, they have $29.5 million to play with here. So let's do some quick math. Even if you wanted to sign Elias Pettersson to a long-term deal, now you can do it. If you want to sign Hughes to a long-term deal, now you can do it. You can get both those guys signed for a combined $18 million even, right? Like you could, and you still have $12 million to address your defense, sign Dickinson, and sign a backup goalie. It would get tight, but you can at least fill out your team doing that. I still see it unlikely as the team doing long-term deals for both those players, especially Quinn Hughes because of his leverage point in the seasons he's had so far. He's just quite doesn't have the same argument to get Heiskanen or Makar money, so his best interest is probably to take a short-term deal. But if you decide to go long-term with Pettersson, now you can. And you still have room, guys, to address your defense. The question here is, do you go bridge still with Pettersson and with Quinn Hughes and then use that money to go aggressive in the free agency and the trade market? Because now all of a sudden, you can take on bigger tickets if you wanted to.
Yeah, when I think about that right shot D equation, you know, how much are you willing to pay? We know they need a first pair defender. So if you are going all in, and we're talking about, you know, the summer of Jim and him just being super aggressive on everything, and it's proven to be true based off to that, you know, that press conference that he had last month, he's showing it right now. If this is your window to, you know, to win in the next couple of years, you gotta, you know, establish yourself, especially in that first pair. And I understand the Ekman-Larsson move was to maybe take a little bit of pressure off of Quinn Hughes, and you've got another defenseman that can eat minutes, and you hope that Oliver Ekman-Larsson is still that player, at least a top three defender on this team. But you need that right-hand shot. So if you're being aggressive, what are we talking about in terms of a dollar spend? Sat, you talked about, you know, potentially having $12 million to play with to add defense and also a goalie, a fourth line center. How much of that $12 to $13 million is going to be on a right shot defenseman? What's the equation? How big of a slice of that pie is it? Are we talking about $5 million defenseman here? Because you essentially can make that move if you want to. And I feel as though this team needs it because bringing back Hamonic in that same role, to me, is a stagnant move. Like, you still need somebody solid for beyond a year or two to play alongside Quinn Hughes. Do you make that move this year, or do you wait until next year is the question?
I mean, there's
Well,
just...
it depends on what you want to do. Just quickly, because here's the thing. The Canucks have been linked to Tyson Berry in the past. He doesn't fit kind of what you have, you have Myers already, but what if you decide to get really weird? They could do something like that if they really wanted to, right? I'm not sure they would actually go down that road, but they actually have options here to spend $5 million on a defenseman if they want to.
Yeah, and, you know, like Dougie Hamilton is the big one on the board. We know David Savard is likely going to Montreal, so that's not going to be a potential option there. There's not a lot. So I do wonder if they eventually explore the trade route once again. You know, yes, Seattle traded Curtis McDermott, but, you know, they still have some extra defensemen on their roster that they may part with for mid-round selections or something to that effect. Like, there's maybe still some on the trade market. Again, we circle back to the problem that the Canucks don't have a lot to trade with. And that is eventually, you know, the circle that never really ends with the Vancouver Canucks. But what do they do at right shot D is a big part of this. Also, you know, at fourth line center. In the 6 o'clock hour, we will dive into some of the bargain bin options that the Canucks may have to go with for fourth line center. Now, something we haven't talked about today, but I definitely wanted to get to, Alexander Ovechkin re-upping with the Washington Capitals. And it's a 5-year deal. I don't think many of us expected Ovi to sign that long. I certainly didn't. But he does. It's just under $10 million per at, well, it continues at $9.5 million for the next 5 years. And now the focus really is on Alexander Ovechkin beating Gretzky's record. He is 164 goals away from tying the record. He needs an average of 33 per season over the next five to get there. Do we see Alexander Ovechkin? Is this 5-year deal all about the chase for $8.95?
Man, I think he gets it. I think he gets it. Like, I'm going to bet on Alex Ovechkin beating the record.
To me, he's the greatest goal scorer that ever lived. No disrespect to Wayne Gretzky, but based on the games that he's played, based on the lockouts he's had to go through, based on the COVID pandemic he's had to go through, I think he's already there, but I'm with you, Sat. I think he gets there based on the fact that he always stays healthy as well, right? Last couple of years, okay, missing a few games, you expect that number of missed games to maybe even increase, but this is a player that can score so many different ways. But even if he slows down a little bit, that Ovechkin spot on the power play, he's still getting it done there. He's still up there when we're talking about power play goals in the league. So maybe, you know, it's, we want to see it happen. We want to see history in front of our own eyes. I'm sure that's a part of it. We've seen this player grow from being that rookie when he came to the NHL in 05, 06 to all of a sudden still doing this at a high level. Part of it is, sure, we want to see it. But based on his track record, guys, he doesn't get hurt very often. I hope it stays that way because I would love to see him break that record.
You know, you say greatest goal scorer that ever lived. And, you know, it's, I know Gretzky at 894, it's hard to imagine that you might put somebody else on that list. But think of the eras that Ovi has played in. You have to definitely take that into account, right? The dead puck era. Yeah, the salary cap era. He's missed, you know, he missed his rookie season because of the lockout. He missed half of another season because of the 2012 lockout. Has had shortened seasons here because of the COVID situation. You know, Ovi could realistically be at 800 goals already. Well, he would definitely be at 800 goals already if he had not gone through those situations. So this is a player that has stayed healthy pretty much entirely through his career. He had a groin injury that kept him out of some games this past season, was also on the COVID list. But otherwise, you look at his games played, he's pretty much like in and around 82 every single season. And for as much as we talk about aging curves, yeah, maybe there's some worry there. But, like, his game hasn't dropped off at all, especially on the offensive end. He might not be as great or may not do as much work defensively at 5-on-5 as he once did. But even still, like, he's an offensive juggernaut even at, what is he going to be, 36 in September? Look, I've doubted Alexander Ovechkin enough times in my career. I'm not going to doubt him on this.
No, I'm not doubting Ovechkin either. And you know what he's playing for. He signed a 5-year contract because he wants the record. He is a Russian machine. I don't know how he stays in shape this well and how he's as good as he still is, but I'm not betting against him. This is what he's motivated to do now. Now, I don't care what he's going to say about it. When you're this close, you want to do it. And honestly, he might be the guy that nobody beats. Like, that's how good Ovechkin has been. Now, eventually, maybe somebody will, but it may not be in our lifetime, guys. Like, that's how hard it is to get this many goals. And if it wasn't for the shortened seasons and the lockouts and all this sort of stuff, he'd be so much closer to it already. So on merit alone, he deserves it, and I really think he's going to get there.
They've already got their Stanley Cup, which I'm sure they want another one, but if you're Ted Leonsis, the owner in Washington, you're saying Ovi has been a cash cow for that organization. He's been loyal, but also imagine the marketing around that sort of thing. You know, we talk about home run campaigns and home run races. Remember the Race to Maris?
Yeah.
This would be hockey's version of the Race to Maris. We've never seen anything like this in our time. And I'm sure there's, you know, older listeners that were around in the 80s and maybe, you know, were able to watch those monster point hauls. So that's a different perspective. I wasn't around. I was very young at that point, even during Gretzky or Lemieux's time. But in the last 25, 30 years, when can we say that hockey's ever had a moment like that where you're looking at the scoreboard and saying, did Ovi get one tonight? Like, hockey would love that. Hockey needs that. Imagine that on ESPN in a couple years' time when it's the chase to Gretzky's record. That would be a marketing, you know, just a cash cow for this league and that team especially. So, yeah, if you're Ted Leonsis, you're saying $9.5 million. Hey, sign a 10-year deal if you want. Just come back to Washington.
Well, Gretzky was that big of a star, right? And the game, as much as Crosby and some of these other guys are there, you know, Gretzky, with especially all the glitz and glamour of L.A. and then closing his career in New York and everything he meant through the 80s and the dominance, the numbers he put up, he was the guy. And you haven't really had that. But you put Ovi down on what was an unchaseable record, or what thought to be an unchaseable record, that's going to get some eyebrows going. The only names that are ahead of Ovi in goals per game in NHL history: one, Pavel Bure.
He was good.
The great Babe Dye was brilliant through 1919 through 1931.
We'll have to look him up.
Cy Denneny, fantastic all the way up till 1929. Mario Lemieux and Mike Bossy. Those are the only ones.
Those guys I know.
Yes.
Well, you're not a big Cy Denneny fan? Come on.
Actually, I have a Cy Denneny jersey.
No, hockey card, actually.
Oh, yeah? Do you keep that
Where
one in the safe set?
Yeah, definitely not. It's probably worth less than the paper was it cost to make it.
Cy Denneny played with the Ottawas and the Bostons through the 1919 and all the way through the 20s.
So select company is what you're saying.
Yes.
I like to say that maybe Bure was the greatest goal scorer ever, but he also played in an era where, I mean, he kind of went through the dead puck era as well and was still scoring too, but also some years where there were still guys scoring at really prolific rates when he was scoring a lot of goals too. It's got to be Ovechkin, doesn't it? When you factor in what we mentioned as far as, you know, the shortened seasons and the lockouts and all that sort of stuff, but also how hard it is to score goals now in this era and the era he came up through. To me, he's the greatest goal scorer we've ever seen in the National Hockey League.
Marcus,
at least I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think so too. Marcus and Gibson's The Long History of Canada versus Russia in Hockey, and this is their golden child, breaking the all-time records. This text, Gretz didn't play against Michelin men goalies either. No, he didn't.
No, he didn't. Was there an overlap of Ovi's career and Garth Snow's? The guy that literally covered every inch of the net?
Pretty much. This Wrong Answers Only has been pretty fun today on Nate Schmidt. And we'll continue it through the 6 o'clock hour. Have some fun. We'll replay a little bit of Elliot Friedman coming up after 6:30. This text on Nate Schmidt: why did Nate Schmidt waive his no move or his no trade clause to go to Winnipeg? Mark, Schmidt agreed to go to Winnipeg because he can actually afford to buy a house there. Maybe like 7 houses in Winnipeg.
He might be able to buy a whole residential block with that money, man. That's $5.9 million can get you a lot in other cities other than Vancouver.
He might be able to buy the rink.
He's going to be able to buy a lot in Winnipeg. Keep those texts coming in. Coming up after 6 o'clock, it's going to be Eddie Lack, Taco Tuesdays with Eddie Lack here every single Tuesday on The People's Show. Now, earlier in the program, we gotta get Eddie on this because we asked Antoine Roussel if, you know, any real estate agents had been in touch with him down in Arizona, and he said Eddie Lack had already reached out. So Eddie Lack is like full-on vulture He's just like, oh, Canucks traded a bunch of guys to Arizona. Let me get their numbers. And he's just like, all right, here we go. Tip-top salesman. We're going to talk to Eddie Lack coming up.
Every day he's hustling. He's trying to get that commission, baby.
Eddie Lack, he's working the phones. We'll talk to Eddie next here on The People Show. It is Sportsnet 650.